This programme was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee. Older Voices is a programme made by CRY 104 FM on the lives of older people living in the Ballymacoda and Ladysbridge area. Their stories are told in their own voice. In this episode, we speak with Pat Lynch from Ahavine. Pat begins by telling us about his family and how his mother and father grew up in quite difficult conditions. His father was a ganger, which meant he was the foreman of a group of men working on the roads. This term is still used today.
Well, I was born actually in the Ahavine Crossing, Ahavine, Ballymacoda. I was born locally in the house, as everybody was back then. My father was Tom Lynch. And my mother's name was Margaret Horgan. She grew up in very tough times altogether. She often spoke about how tough times were when she was growing up. Like, her father was a farm labourer. He worked for 7 shillings a week. And even back then, 7 shillings wouldn't buy you much, you know. But that was the rate at the time. It wasn't that the people he was working for were doing him an injustice. That was a shilling a day was sort of the golden rate for farm labourers back then.
And what did your father do?
My own father was, most of the time, he was a ganger in the roads. Now, what a ganger was, you know, people who were looking after the roads and filling potholes and scouring ditches they did long ago. He was a ganger. He'd have a gang of 4 or 5 men, and he'd be sort of organising them and keeping them going. And essentially, he'd be doing the same work as them most of the time. But at the end of the week, he'd be the fellow who'd take down the names and the addresses and send them off the pay sheets off to the county council to get paid and all the rest of it, you know. So that was his title, and he was at that for most of his life. Well, he did finish up the last about 8, 9, 10 years of his life probably as a clerk in the county council office in Yall. He was sort of, I think, the engineer there. Decided he wanted somebody to help him, and he decided he'd bring my father out of the cold.
Well, he probably deserved it after all those years.
Exactly, yeah.
He speaks about the freedom he had as a child in the olden days, although there were not many children around the area and they didn't have what we know as playdates. As children, Pat and his family made their own entertainment with no computers or television available.
You wandered off down on the fields and out to the river and, you know, it was great. And it offered more freedom that time. You didn't have to be reporting back every... If you were missing for a half an hour, nobody would be worried. You know, because if your mother was looking after somebody else's mother probably was, you know.
Yeah, and that's the whole camaraderie in the area.
Exactly, yeah. I feel I remember we used to play when the oil lamps were there. The oil lamp would be hanging by the fireplace, and if you stood between the oil lamp then and the back wall, it would be whitewashed. The walls would all be whitewashed, and you could somebody would sit facing the wall, and you'd stand behind them between the lamp and the wall, and you'd hold up something like in front of the lamp, and the shadow would come on the wall, and you wouldn't hold it in a way that would be recognisable immediately. You'd hold it like this, you know, sideways first, so that it might look just flat and round, and you'd be slowly turning it around to the right shape to try and guess what it was, you know. All these sorts of things. It's amazing with children, you can always find things to do. There are no other children immediately around us. The nearest one would be Slocum, so we'd be about a quarter of a mile or so down the road. So, like, we didn't normally play with other children that much in the evenings. You know, we'd be visiting houses, at least, without saying that we didn't do much of it at all, or other than come visiting us that much. I mean, children come in playing, we go out with other children. Like my grandchildren, they know, every so often they want to go off to somebody else's house for the evening after school, and somebody else come back in. We never did anything like that. Because, of course, you have to walk there and walk back. Nowadays you can drive 10 miles away with a bundle of kids in the car and that's it. But then, of course, every place had everyone walked everywhere. Because, of course, during the war years, they were, for a start, you'd know, as I said, you'd know transport, you'd know motor cars.
most people nowadays have a car, and most likely two in the family. Pat speaks about the novelty of cars in the parish and how donkeys and horses and traps were a much more common form of transport.
The priest in Shanahan's and Cashman's, the two shops in Bamacore village, well, it was three actually, Rumley's as well, but Shanahan's and Cashman's, they had a car each, and it was used for as hackneys as well. If somebody wanted, had to go to Cork, for instance, in a hurry or something like that, or go to somewhere, they'd hire a car to get there.
It's almost hard to imagine that there was only three cars in the parish.
Exactly. Matter of fact, I remember I was walking home from school, halfway down John McGrath's Hill. The priest, Father Casey, caught up to me in his baby Ford, and he picked me up and he drove me, said about 150 yards from there down to the cross below, to drop me off. Well, I was the proudest man going to school the following day. I got a spin in a motor car and you didn't. You know, this is the thing. I was one of the few people in the class who had actually sat inside the motor car.
It's hard to fathom.
It is hard to believe that, yeah. And I even remember when we were small, if we had the motor car coming, we would jump out of the kitchen table and race over to the gate and look at watch the car passing.
And did you own a bicycle? Did you cycle?
Oh, and then, yeah, we got bicycles then as we grew up. We bicycle was where we went. Or else, with ourselves now as well, we had a donkey car, a lovely donkey car, which was a bit unusual. Because most people, of course, yeah, like farmers now would have find horses and traps and that kind of thing. But I lived in a country cottage. Matter of fact, back in the 40s, sort of, I suppose we were the lowest social order in the sense that if you lived in a cottage, a labourer's cottage by the side of the road, that was sort of the bottom rung of the ladder. By the side of the road was an important addition to it, a labourer's cottage by the side of the road, because most farm houses, old houses, would have been living inside the farm a bit. There'd be a boreen going into them. So being by the side of the road was a kind of a derogatory thing to say. You know, you were born in the labourer's cottage at the side of the road. Farmers never have the fine big tub traps and all the rest of it. But we used to have to borrow a donkey for the Sunday mass in Smitty's next door to the donkey. That was a relic of old days, you see, because whatever they pulled the donkey, which was long since gone, but the donkey still existed, so we used that donkey to go to mass on Sunday, you know. Or a woman across the road must had a donkey of her own as well, that was of no, had nothing else to pull either, she was a widow, and she'd sometimes borrow our car and use her own donkey to go over to Valmacoda for things.
The Catholic Church has had a powerful influence over the Irish state since 1922, but this has diminished in recent decades. Sunday Mass was a very important part of the lives of families in Ballymacoda and was also a type of social event.
Everybody went to Mass on a Sunday. And of course, they came walking, cycling, donkeys and boats and ponies and traps and all this sort of horses and cars. All the horses and donkeys and boats would be tied onto stumps of trees all along there. So if you're kind of late coming, you could be well back. If you wanted a good spot up early, you could come fairly early, make sure you're up near the front. And all, just all of those, instead of having cars rows down the village, you had all these horses and donkeys. Everybody could see everybody else and talk to everybody else. There were two masses, 8 o'clock I think it was, and 11, I think that was it. But the thing is, there was no communion given out at the 11 o'clock Mass for a very simple reason, that you're fasting for midnight. But if you're fasting for midnight and walking from, say, 4 miles out, maybe from Knockadoon up, you know, you might have to leave it at 7 o'clock to get there for 8 o'clock, and to be 9 o'clock, well, to be nearly 10 o'clock before you get back home, have your breakfast. So if you, it was only the first Mass they give out communion then, because obviously anyone would be fasting and go to first Mass, because they'd be having their breakfast after Mass. Communion just wasn't given out at 11 o'clock Mass.
The Second World War was a global war lasting from 1939 to 1945. The Republic of Ireland has been neutral in international relations since the 1930s. During World War II, which the Irish government referred to as the emergency, Ireland decided to remain neutral. In the course of the war, thousands of men and women from Ireland served as volunteers in the British Armed Forces. With the 70th anniversary of the outbreak of World War II approaching, it is important to remember the 7,000 or so Irish servicemen and women who died during this war. During war times, the people left at home suffered hardship in the form of rations, and lots of things were not available, such as foodstuff and fuel. Pat remembers the coal shortage and the cutting of turf in the local bog.
A lot of things weren't available in those years. For instance, growing up, I didn't have a clue what a banana tasted like or an orange tasted like, or even what a real one looked like. I remember seeing in shop, and there was some shop in the yard, had bananas, they were timber painted bananas on the window, and I knew that's what they were told they looked like. I didn't know what they tasted like. Not an orange either, because you couldn't get them during the war years. One even more basic than that, you couldn't get white bread. It was all brown bread, because everything was used, you see, there was nothing. So you could be throwing away bran and all like that. So it was all, the shop bread was all brown bread. The most of the bread, of course, would be cooked by your mother at home. My mother at home would cook it in the vegetable. She'd sew the bread, you know, to be brown bread. But she had some sort of silk stock or something. She'd sometimes sift the flour and she'd make white cotton cake for us. And that was a luxury, you know.
Wow, that sounds beautiful. Did the war trickle down to Ballymacota? Did you know exactly what was going on?
Well, you see, I had arrived in 1939. I was only three, so I couldn't kind of remember what life was like before. So it was kind of normal to have this business of war. And, you know, you'd have maps in the... Remember seeing maps on the paper showing where the Allies were and where the Germans were and this kind of thing. And the odd occasion, you'd hear the odd airplane flying overhead. And the odd occasion, no, this is real, I'd imagined, planes with different sound. I remember sometime we were running out and my older brother told me that was a German plane because it sounded different. Now, whether it was or not, I have no idea. He might be just taking the rise out of us, you know, but we thought it was a German plane. Fuel. You see, you couldn't get coal in from England during the war years. So it was nearly all turf. And there was a bog in Ballymacota down there that got the water. I think Welsh is bogged down along Boreen there, just near the Water Bridge. And you could buy a little rent, get a plot for, I don't know, 10 shillings or whatever it was. And you dig your own turf there. And for years we dug our own turf. Now the thing is, it wasn't on the surface turf like you'd be up in the Bog of Allen and Kildare or anything like that. You had to dig maybe down three feet before you come to the turf at all. And then you dig down from that. And eventually, my father would disappear below the level of the ground altogether. He'd throw some of the turf up to us and we'd bring it along. We put it out first to dry because we'd like butter nearly to come up first. It'd be quite wet and soft. And then after a few days drying, you'd send two or three sods together. That was called footing turf. And then you'd put up in little stacks after that, you know. And then you'd bring home this load of turf and you'd make a huge reek of turf then during the summer. And that would see you right through the winter. Everybody, most people around were doing it, you know, they all had their own little square of turf, you know, a square to dig away. And there was a great community camaraderie down below the turf bar because they'd all be down there.
Although life was hard, Pat feels that people were more content, even though they had a lot less than the people of today.
Nowadays you can't comprehend what things were like. It was a different world, you know. And it was a contented world and everybody's busy doing their own thing. And I mean, I know there was poverty and there was everything else, but there seemed to be a lot of contentment there as well. We were poor, but I never realised then, I was only looking back, I realised we were poor. Because most everybody else was more or less the same. There was nobody very wealthy around. The farmers obviously might have had more access, we say, to milk and butter and eggs and meat and things that we would have more than we would have. But I mean, at the same time, we were never hungry, we had plenty, thank God, always.
For once I fell in love with the maiden so bewitching, Miss Henrietta Bell, out of Captain Kelly's kitchen, with me Tooralooralah, me Tooralooralah, me Tooralooralah. Tooraloora laddie, at the age of 17, I was apprenticed to a grocer, not far from Stephen's Green, where Miss Henry used to go, sir. Her manners were sublime.
We would like to thank Pat Lynch for taking the time to speak with us and for sharing his memories and stories from his life. Pat Lynch and his mother were always huge fans of the Clancy Brothers. He admired their music, and we're playing this one for him.
Were to have the flare up, I dressed myself quite gay, and I frizzed and oiled my hair up. The captain had no wife, faith he had gone a fishing, and we kicked up my life down below stairs in the kitchen with me tooraloora la, tooraloora laddie, tooraloora la, tooraloora laddie.
Older Voices was funded by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland with the television licence fee and in association with the Ballymacoda and Ladiesbridge Historical Society. Older Voices was produced and narrated by Orla Reardon and edited by Tomás O'Keefe. Older Voices is a Community Radio Yall production.